Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to welcome you all to another wild and woolly edition of Torah Studies Live. No quarantine or social distancing is going to stop us from studying Torah. This is how we roll, and we wouldn't have it any other way. So it is fabulous to see you all here this evening. And when I say to see you all, I literally mean to see you all. It's the coolest thing. Tonight's class is all about the upcoming holiday of Pesach, Passover. Tonight is Torah Studies / Pesach Boot Camp. We do this before the holidays. We have what we call a boot camp to get spiritually ready for the holidays. We do it on Wednesday nights in conjunction with our Torah Studies class. So this is, on the one half of the coin, Torah Studies, and the other half, Pesach Boot Camp. Whatever it is, it's going to be amazing and meaningful and enriching. And my hope is that it will share a unique perspective on, in my opinion, an unprecedented Pesach 2020. Certainly in my lifetime, there's never been a Passover like this. And I think for a long time, there hasn't been a Passover like this. So the goal of tonight's class is to study, to connect, to be inspired, to learn about Passover, and specifically to learn insights that can help us perhaps be more positive about what might otherwise be a difficult Passover experience. Okay, so let us begin with a connection. And the connection that I want to make is, I can't stop thinking about this, how there was a plague in Egypt, the 10th plague. You remember the movie, the Ten Commandments? Yeah? And there was that green stuff that was floating through the air, or like near the ground, like, right, the green stuff that was like the plague of death to the firstborn. And God tells, I mean, that was in the movie. I'm not saying it was like that in real life. Okay, but in real life, God tells the Jewish people to stay inside. Don't go out of your homes. Paint your doors red with the blood, right? Stay inside, bring the Paschal lamb, etc. Do the mitzvah that you need to do. Stay inside and the plague will pass over us. I mean, I can't help but think that, you know, we're living in a time where there is this plague, right, around us, and God forbid, Rachmana Litzlan, you know, God should help those that have been afflicted by it and are, you know, that are ill with it, should have a refu shlema, a full healing. There are people that I know, even relatives that need a full healing from coronavirus. And I can't help but think, you know, we're living at a time when we're being encouraged to stay indoors and not go outside, and not socialize, and not, you know, whatever, because of this plague around us. I can't get that imagery of the 10th plague out of my head. But anyway, I digress. That's not what today's class is focused on. Here's the focus on tonight. Tonight's class is honing in on the Afikoman, right? Everybody familiar with the Afikoman? Yes? Yes? All right, good. Dan, awesome. Okay, Afikoman is the matzah that we break in middle of, toward the beginning of the Seder. So Avikoman is the matzah. So let's go through the steps of the Seder. There's Kaddish, we make the Kiddush. Urchas, we wash our hands. Karpas, we dip the vegetable. Right? Yachatz. Step number four is break the middle matzah. We have three matzot. We take the middle matzah, we break it in half, and inevitably, unless you have like the magic touch, inevitably there's going to be one half that's larger and one half that's smaller. So the tradition is you take the larger half of matzah and you put it away to the end of the meal for the rest of the Seder, for the next steps, till the end of the meal. And at the end of the meal, you enjoy the Afikoman. Now, a few points to mention. Number one, in Chabad tradition, you take the larger piece and you break it into five pieces. You take that half of matzah, the larger half, and you actually divide it, subdivide it into five pieces, and you put the five pieces away for the Afikoman. Now, I want to ask you a question. Here's a shaila. Here's a question. Who puts away the Afikoman? Who puts it away? You can feel free to unmute yourself and jump right in. No, who? Huh?
Kids.
The kids. It's tradition, right, that the kids oftentimes are the ones that that are hiding the afikoman. And what happens at the end of the meal when you have to eat the afikoman and the kids have hid it? So what happens?
Blackmail,
ransom. You want it back, it's going to cost you. Back in the day, it used to cost, I don't know, maybe a yo-yo. I'm talking like before my times, like a yo-yo, maybe a paper airplane, maybe something, right? Today, are you kidding me? It's an iPad, it's an iPhone, it's a Lamborghini, it's a Tesla, right? It's like a new generation. You want your afikoman, that's it, it's going to cost you. Fine.
Rabbi.
Yes.
So, we've always done a little differently. The person leading the Seder is the one that has the afikoman, and one of the kids will take it when the person is not looking.
Right.
And they'll keep it to the end. And at the end of the Seder, the person will ask who has the afikoman, you bargain whatever, and then you give the afikoman, and then the afikoman is broken into as many pieces as people around the table.
Right. A variation. Thank you for sharing that. And there are other variations. Some have the custom where the parents hide it and the kids find it. Some have it where the kids hide it and the parents hide it. It's all many traditions. But the question is, and this is the question we're going to start the class with, is where did this notion of kind of, you know, bargaining, hiding the afikoman, where does it come from? And of course, especially in this setting, I will say, I'm glad you asked because I have just the answer for you. Okay, I'm about to share my screen and very soon you will see, in just a moment, you're going to see the text for tonight's class. 3, 2, 1, boom. You have it?
Yes.
All right, let's begin. Ray, I hear your mic is on. If you don't mind, please get us started with text 1A. This is from the Talmud. This, according to many, is the source for hiding the afikoman and the whole negotiation.
Rabbi Eliezer says, we grab matzot on the nights of Passover so that the children should not fall asleep.
Look at that. Look what we have here. Rabbi Eliezer in the Talmud, one of the greatest sages of the Talmud, says, you know, the Seder is all about engaging the child and, of course, the inner child as well. It's all about keeping the kids engaged and involved pedagogically. It's unsurpassed. Years before, centuries before, the notion of hands-on education and interactive learning, Jewish people had this notion of a Seder in which everything is hands-on, in which you engage the child in a very tactile experience. And so Rabbi Eliezer says, what another way to keep the child involved is you grab matzot. Now, who grabs and what happens? It's not specified. But the point here is that there's something about grabbing the matzot. Ray, please continue with the text 1b from Rabbi Yaakov Emden, one of the great scholars of the 1700s.
There is a custom in Ashkenazi communities for the children to snatch the afikoman. This custom can be traced to the Talmud, which states, we grab matzot on the nights of Passover.
All right, so what we have here is very clear from Rabbi Yaakov Emden. Here is a specific, explicit source that says the custom in Ashkenazi communities, right, for the children to snatch the afikoman is coming from the Talmudic passage that predates it over 1,000 years that says we grab matzot on the nights of Passover. Like I mentioned, sometimes it's the kids. Some others, other communities, other families have the custom that the parents hide it. Some have the custom that no one hides it, but just there's bargaining anyway. I will tell you that others, I don't have a source for this inside the text, but I'll tell you outside that there are some who are not so happy about this custom, and they don't do it. Some families don't have the children take the afikoman. Why? Because it's, even in a positive way or for a positive thing, it's teaching the children to steal or to take. You know, to take it, to hide it, it's somewhat, you know, even if it's in a kosher context, it's still, what's the lesson or what's the message? You're taking something that's not necessarily yours. So therefore, some shy away from it. Take a look at text number 2. And here, the Rebbe, in his commentary on the Haggadah, let me explain. The Rebbe wrote a commentary, the Lubavitcher Rebbe, in the 1940s, 1943 or 1945, the Rebbe wrote, this is before he formally became Rebbe, this is when he was the son-in-law of the previous Rebbe, he wrote a commentary on the Haggadah, on the Passover Haggadah. And the commentary is essentially an elaborate discussion about the customs and the laws of the Seder. It goes through the entire Seder, and the Rebbe writes kind of footnotes and commentary on it. So here is what the Rebbe writes about stealing the Afikoman. Who can we ask to read? Who is ready to read? How about David? Are you up to reading?
Yeah.
All right, text. Perfect. Text number 2, the custom.
The custom is in some communities is that the children snatch the afikomen, which is thereafter redeemed for a gift, claiming that it is founded in the works of the Talmud. We grab matzot on the nights of Passover so that the children should not fall asleep. The previous Rebbe related that one time, as a little girl, the Rebbe Maharash eldest daughter snatched the afikomen for her father. It seems that this was the exception, as the custom of snatching the afikomen was not practiced in the Rebbe's home.
So this is the Rebbe writing before he was Rebbe. Thank you. And the Rebbe says that this is not necessarily a Chabad Rebbe minhag. In the Rebbe's home, it wasn't normally done. It happened once that the fourth Rebbe, the Rebbe Marash, Rebbe Shmuel, who lived a while ago, the fourth Chabad Rebbe, that his daughter snatched the Afikoman, but that was the exception, not the rule. It typically wasn't done for the reasons that I mentioned before, because some say it's kind of inculcating, or even in a kind of an unintended way, it's educating the notion of taking something that doesn't belong to you and negotiating it. So it's kind of like it's a little bit cheeky, and you know, I don't know. It sounds like, you know, like what, we can't have fun, but again, there's a certain sensitivity there that some have. But in many, many families, there is this notion of taking the Afikoman. Now, when does the Afikoman make its grand appearance? It makes its grand appearance, and it's consumed, it's eaten, at the end of the meal. So you go through, after you break the middle matzah and put the larger half aside, you go through the rest of the steps. You tell the story of the Exodus, you wash your hands, and you eat the matzah, and then you eat the maror, and then you make the sandwich, and then you eat the meal. And at the end of the meal, at the end of the, after the chicken soup, and after the brisket, and after the potatoes, I'm sure there's potatoes involved, maybe, and after the fish, and after everything, after maybe the applesauce, whatever you have for dessert, right? It's Pesach, after all. What are you going to have? Whatever, I mean, you're not going to have a cake, but although there is Pesach cake, correct myself, there is definitely Pesach cake, but the bottom line is, at the end of the meal, after everything is done, what happens? Oh, we bring out the matzah, we bring out the afikoman, and then after we're all full, we then pound some extra matzah, and that is called the afikoman. Now, where does it come from? Why are we eating matzah at the end of the meal? Why is it called afikoman? First of all, this is an open question, so unmute yourself if you have the answer to the question. What does the word afikoman mean? Who's got it? Afikoman, what does it mean? Huh?
Dessert in Greek.
Dessert? Right. Yes, wait, who got that?
Baruch Ben Moshe and Doreen.
Nice. Bert, good to hear from you. Yes, the answer, that is correct. Afikoman means dessert. And that's why we eat at the end, because it's like our dessert. It's what we eat at the end of the meal. Now, why do we eat it at the end? It all goes back to the Paschal Lamb. So let me explain. It all goes back to the Karban Pesach. There are three important elements for the Seder. In fact, in the Seder, in the Haggadah, we say that unless you say these three things, you have not fulfilled your obligation. And they are Pesach, Matzah, Maror. You have to talk about the Paschal Lamb. You have to talk about Paschal Lamb. You have to talk about the Matzah, and you have to talk about the Maror. Those are the three important things. Now, Matzah we eat, Maror we eat, but where's the Paschal Lamb? So, the simple answer is there's no Paschal Lamb. Why not? Because we don't have a temple, and we don't have an altar, and we're not bringing sacrifices. So no sacrifices, no Paschal Lamb, right? No dice, no beef, or no lamb. Okay, fine. So that's why we don't have a Korban Pesach. But you can't just let a Seder go by without any commemoration of the Paschal Lamb. So on our Seder plates, we have the shank bone, number one. And number two, at the end of the meal, we have another piece of matzah, and that matzah symbolically represents the Passover lamb that you're not eating. Are you with me on this? Yes? Instead of eating Paschal lamb, you eat an additional measure of matzah. So the afikoman is in place of the Paschal lamb. Let's take a look at some text over here. Here we go. Okay, oh wait, no. So before we get to the text, when it came to the Paschal lamb, okay, when it came to the Korban Pesach, you would eat it at the end of the meal. In the times of the temple, when they had a Paschal lamb, you would eat your entire meal, and at the end of the meal, you would have the Paschal lamb. The question is why? The question is why are you having the Paschal lamb all the way at the end of the meal? And I will tell you that the commentaries discuss this. So let's now turn to text 3a. All right, who are we going to ask to read? Charna, please read, if you will, text 3a.
Okay. The holiday sacrifice, which accompanied the Passover sacrifice, is eaten first so that the Passover sacrifice is eaten on a full stomach.
You would eat the Paschal lamb, the Paschal sacrifice, once you were already full, i.e. at the end of the meal. Let's continue 3b. This is the same as true with the matzah.
We do not add any dessert, afikoman, after the Passover sacrifice.
Right, so there's no... this is not the matzah. This is still the Passover sacrifice. You would not have any dessert, afikoman, right? Afikoman actually means dessert. You would not have dessert after the Passover sacrifice because that was your dessert. And today, again, today we don't have that. We don't have the Passover lamb. But what we do have is the matzah, and the same thing is true with the matzah. Text 3... Hold on. I keep on jumping to matzah. We're not yet at matzah. Before we read text 3c, let me set this up. The question that the commentaries wonder is, why does it need to be eaten at the end of the meal? Why at the end of the meal? Why not have it at the beginning of the meal? What's the significance? And the Rashbam, text 3c, gives us a beautiful explanation. The Rashbam, who is a grandson of Rashi, the Rashbam gives us an insight that I'm going to mute you for a second. Okay, so just like kings, the difference between a king and a pauper, right? What is a pauper is eating because they're hungry. A king is eating not because he's hungry, but because he can, right? So a person who doesn't have food, they're eating because they're hungry, they're starving. But a wealthy person, a king, nobility, is not hungry. Of course, the king at some point is hungry, but the king eats often because he can, because it's a luxurious experience of eating. And so this is the deeper meaning of why the Paschal lamb was eaten at the end. Because what is Passover? Passover is the celebration of our freedom. It's a celebration of being kings and queens. It's a celebration of freedom, of wealth. We lean, we recline when we eat. We drink four cups of wine. These are all symbolic of malchus, of royalty. And here is yet another symbolism. We specifically eat the Paschal lamb, not while we're hungry, but while we're already full. So you have the whole meal. And then in the times of the temple, only then you would eat the Paschal lamb. But why are you eating it if you're not hungry? That's the point. You're not hungry and you're still eating because it's rich, it's wealth. We're rolling in the food. It's freedom, baby. That's why we eat the Paschal lamb at the end of the meal to symbolize this royalty. Charna, please read. That's the introduction. Please read text to receive from the Rashbam.
Okay. It is forbidden to eat anything after the Passover sacrifice so as not to remove its taste from the mouth, and because it ought to be eaten at the end of the meal when one is sated. The same is true of all sacrifices, as the verse states, for distinction, i.e. for greatness, the way kings eat.
All right, so again, it's about eating like a king, eating like a melech. And how does a king eat? A king eats even once he is full, even once he's satisfied. And that's how we eat on Pesach, on Passover. We eat the Paschal lamb at the end of the meal. We're not hungry. We still eat it. We're living large. Okay, now the same thing is true with the matzah. I've been itching to talk about the matzah for a few texts, as you've noticed. And here Maimonides tells us that just like it was in the times of the temple with the Passover with the Passover lamb, the Paschal lamb, which we don't have today, the same thing is true today. We have with the matzah / afikoman that we eat at the end of the meal. Afikoman means dessert. There is no dessert after the afikoman because that is our dessert. Text number 4. Let's see, who should we ask to read? Steve, are you up to reading text number 4?
Okay.
All right.
It is a rabbinic ordinance that nothing at all is eaten after the matzah, not even roasted seeds, nuts, or the like. Rather, even though one ate matzah and afterward ate other foods, fruits and the like, one returns and eats a stick and olive-sized of matzah at the end of the meal and ceases eating.
So, thank you. So, Rambam, Maimonides clearly tells us without any hesitation that you eat matzah, you have your meal, and at the end of the meal, you have another piece of matzah, at least an olive size worth of matzah, amount of matzah, and then you're done. That is your dessert. That's your final taste. Why? Why at the end of the meal? You're already full. That's exactly the point. You're full and you're still eating. You're a king. Kings eat. Kings have so much food, they even eat after they're full. The same thing is true with us on Passover. So we have the extra piece of matzah to symbolize the Paschal lamb. Okay, makes sense so far? Yes? Yes-ish? Yeah? Okay. By the way, if you have any questions, you can unmute yourself. I'm only keeping it defaulted muted in order to avoid background noise that might be disturbing. But if you have any questions, jump in, any comments, jump right in, unmute yourself, and away we go. Okay, so far we have the basic explanation. However, you and I might not be satisfied with the explanation thus far, and I'll tell you why. Because what we've explained is that you're eating the afikoman, you're eating the, right, which is in place of the Paschal lamb, you're eating it because you want to show that you're still going to eat after you're already full. Okay, I hear that. At the same time, I could argue, and I'm about to argue, that there's another way. And the other approach is to eat something when you're hungry, because then you're appreciating it. If you're already full and you're stuffing it down because you have a mitzvah, you know, maybe it's not so tasteful, right? If you're already full and then you have to eat another piece of lamb or another piece of matzah, you know, it might not be so pleasant. So it's better to eat, one might argue, right? It's a celebration, Passover, it's a celebration, it's a Yom Tov, it's a holiday, freedom, joy, excitement, you know, it's all these wonderful themes. So we're going to eat and then stuff ourselves with more food? And that's freedom. Overeating? How is that a good thing? Maybe it's better, one could argue, and again, that's the question we're putting forth now. Maybe it's better to eat the Paschal lamb and that matzah that we call afikoman that's taking the stead of the Paschal lamb today, maybe we should eat it at the beginning of the meal when we're very hungry so that we're enjoying every morsel, every bite. In fact, this logic is precisely used for Shabbat. Every Shabbat, we use this logic in our observance of Shabbat. Okay, one second. I see there's a comment in the chat. Let me just quickly look. Could you adjust your control to 150%? Absolutely. Yes, I can make the text bigger. Sure. There we go. Better? How could it not be better? It's bigger. Okay, now, so here's my question. My question is, when it comes to Shabbat, there is a law, there is a halacha that says, Friday afternoon, you're not supposed to eat a big meal. After midday, toward the beginning of Shabbat, you're not supposed to have a big meal. Why? So that you go into Shabbat hungry. So that when you sit down for the Shabbat meal, you're going to enjoy it. Because if you're already full and you sit down, I'm not hungry. What kind of meal would that look like? Imagine if you pounded a brisket, a steak, a sushi, challah, bread, a slider, some soup, some gazpacho, some string beans, some asparagus. Yeah, imagine you pounded a meal 4 p.m. Friday. 8 p.m. you sit down to a Shabbos meal. Not hungry. That's not nice. So halacha says, Jewish law says, rather don't eat Friday midday so that you build up an appetite so that you enjoy your Shabbat meals, so that you're looking forward to it. So that's the opposite approach of Pesach, of Passover, where we're eating the very special Paschal lamb or the special Afikoman precisely when we're already full. And again, my question is, if it's good for Shabbos, why isn't it good for the Paschal lamb? If by Shabbos we say that it's a good thing to be hungry while you're eating it so that you enjoy it, why not by Passover? Eat the Paschal lamb when you're hungry so you enjoy it. Eat the Afikoman when you're hungry so you enjoy it. No. At the end of the meal, you're already full. Now you break it out. Who's hungry? Who wants to eat it? So that's the question we're asking now. Take a look at text number 5. Again, if you have any questions at all, just unmute and ask. Jump right in. Any questions? No? Okay, let's jump right in. Karen, are you available to read?
Why a Greek word for the Paschal lamb?
Why a Greek word for Paschal lamb? Honestly, I wish I knew the answer. Doreen, I wish I knew the answer, but it's... I wish I knew the answer, but it's all Greek to me.
Oh, gosh. Thank you. I was waiting for something like that.
Thank you for the setup. I mean, like, there's only, you know, we're working it together. I mean, that's how it is. All right, let's jump back into the text. No, why are we using a Greek word? I'm not sure. I would have to look it up. I'm not sure. Off the cuff. Okay, Rosita, are you ready? Are you ready to read? All right, Rosita, text number 5. Here we go. This is regarding Shabbat.
On the Sabbath, one should not eat anything after the time of the Mincha service so as to enter the Shabbat.
Oops. I think you froze. Hold on. Rosita, where'd you go?
I'm here.
Okay, go for it. Sorry, you cut out with an appetite. I mean, at those words. All right.
Okay, this is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yossi says one may continue to eat until nightfall.
So we have a dispute in the Tosefta, which is on the Mishnah of Brachot, where one opinion says you should not eat in the afternoon. On Friday afternoon so that you build up an appetite. And the other one says, no, you can still eat. Rabbi Yossi says you can still eat. And the halacha is, like the first opinion, like Rabbi Yehuda, that all things being equal, it's better not to eat Friday afternoon so that you do build up an appetite for Shabbat. What we see here is that eating on Shabbat is a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah to have a Shabbat meal. And we want to have the meal with appetite, so we don't eat, so that we eat it with gusto. So why not the same, again, why not the same with Passover? Why not also eat the Paschal lamb when you're hungry, or eat the afikoman matzah when you're hungry? Why do we wait to the end? Why is it different than Shabbat? That's our core question. Okay, so to understand this, we're going to look at a deeper understanding of why we're waiting to eat the Paschal lamb and the afikoman till the end of the meal. Now, we're going to look at this from a spiritual perspective, but this anecdote or this lesson from the Talmud is going to help us get to the spiritual understanding. Text 6a. Let's see, who can we ask to read? Let's see. Okay. Hold on. Mark, are you up to reading? Text 6a, Rabbi Bar Bar Chana.
Rabbi Bar Bar Chana said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, "What is the meaning of the verse, for the paths of God are right, and the just walk in them, but transgressors stumble over them? This is analogous to a case of two people who each roasted their Passover sacrifice. One ate it for the sake of the mitzvah, while the other ate it for pleasure. Of the one who ate it for the sake of the mitzvah, the verse states, and the just walk in them. Of the one who ate it for the sake of pleasure, the verse states, the transgressors stumble over them."
Thank you. So what we see here is there's two people who are eating their Paschal lambs, their carbon Pesachs, their Passover sacrifice. One eats it for the mitzvah. One eats it because they're hungry. And Rabbi Bar Bar Chana says in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, the one who eats it because it's a mitzvah is going in the ways of righteousness. And the one who eats it because they're hungry and they want a steak / roasted lamb, that is referenced to in the verse by saying transgressors stumble over them, which tells us a beautiful insight and a powerful insight. And that is, how do you know that you're really doing it, that you're really eating the Passover lamb because it's a mitzvah? How do you know that you're not just eating it because it's good meat? You with me on this? How do you know that you're eating it because it's a mitzvah? Maybe you're eating the Paschal lamb because it's a good piece of beef or piece of lamb. The answer is...
Does the Hebrew say eating it because of being hungry or for pleasure? Because if it's for pleasure, you're supposed to do a mitzvah with joy and alacrity.
Yeah. It's in the Hebrew, it doesn't say pleasure. It says achila gasa. That means a coarse eating. It's in the translation, it says pleasure, but I wouldn't say pleasure. Gasa means, I don't know, I think it means like coarse or kind of like, you know, like a ravenous.
Like gluttony?
Yeah, yeah. So one eats it for the mitzvah and the other one eats it because they're hungry. So, to fress, exactly. Thank you, David. It means fressing. How do you translate fressing from Yiddish? Fressing means that you're eating it because you're starving, because you're hungry, because you like the food. Yeah. So the question is it a Paschal sacrifice? Is it a holy eating, or is it a barbecue? What are you eating? So the Talmud says, two people eating their the Paschal lambs, right? Two people eating the Karban Pesachs. One is eating it because of the mitzvah. That's righteous. The other one's eating it because he's hungry. Is it still a mitzvah? Yeah, probably still a mitzvah. But is it nice? Not as nice. So now we have a deeper understanding of why it is. Hold on, let's see if we have a text 6b for a moment. Look. Rashi, 6b. Who just read? Mark, can you, if you're still there, can you please read text 6b?
I'm sorry. You want me to read it? You dropped out as we were talking.
Yeah, sorry. Text 6b, please, if you can read text 6b.
Okay. While the other ate it for pleasure, hungrily to satisfy his desire.
There you go. So Rashi explains why. What does it mean for pleasure? It means that he ate it hungrily to satisfy his desire. So now we have an insight into the advantage, the deeper meaning behind eating the afikoman or eating the paschal lamb at the end of your meal. Because if he ate at the beginning of the meal, guess what? Are you doing it because it's a mitzvah? Or are you doing it because you're hungry? Are you eating it because it's Passover and it's a mitzvah and it's a memorial, it's a remembrance of the Exodus and the 10th plague and the freedom and all these themes? Or are you simply fressing? Are you simply, is it simply achila gasa? Is it simply eating because you're hungry and there's good food? In order to highlight the mitzvah, we wait specifically till we're already full and then we eat it. Not just because that's how kings eat, which was the theme that we mentioned before. But now we have a new idea. We eat it at the end of the meal to show to others, but really to show to ourselves, to demonstrate to God also, that we're not eating it for ourselves, for our own pleasure. We're eating it specifically and exclusively because that is the divine will. That's what God wants us to do on this night of Pesach, to eat this Paschal lamb, or today, nowadays, to eat this matzah, this afikoman. Does that make sense? Yes? Ish? Okay. So again, very simply, it might be construed, or not even construed, it might be the fact that we're eating it for ourselves. How do we know we're eating it for God? If you're still eating it when you don't have to, or when you don't, when you don't want to, when you're not hungry anymore. If you're still eating it, now you know it's for the mitzvah. To understand this on a deeper level, let's look at body and soul. And let's kind of talk about two forms of eating, body eating and soul eating. In other words, the body is hungry or the soul is hungry. Because body and soul are really the odd couple. It's this kind of amalgam of two opposites, this marriage of spirit and matter, and they kind of have to work together for 120 years, and it's not always easy. So when it comes to desire, the question that we might ask in any given situation is, okay, which part or partner is fueling this specific desire? Whatever it is. Is it my body that wants it, or is it my soul that wants it? So when we're hungry, like physically hungry, and there's a good piece of food in front of us and we're eating it, it's possible that that experience is completely fueled by our bodies. But when we're not hungry anymore and there's a mitzvah to eat one more item, which is the Paschal lamb, or one more item, which is the afikoman piece of matzah, and we eat it, so now we know that it's our soul that's eating it. It's not a body eating it, it's a soul that's eating it. I want to give you a strange analogy. It's like almost the opposite theme, but it's exactly the same theme. It might appear like the opposite, but it's the same idea. Yom Kippur. What happens in Yom Kippur? We fast for 26 hours, no eating, no drinking. And what's the point of that? To get the body out of the way. Body, don't bother me. I'm not listening. I'm not interested. I know you're hungry. I know you're thirsty. It's not about you today. It's about soul. In some strange way, on Passover, at the Seder, we do the same thing, but with the opposite approach. We feed the body. Have this, have that. This course and that course, are you happy? Are you satisfied? The body is smiling. Yes. Oh, couldn't be better. So then you turn to the body and you say, you're happy? Perfect. Good. Time to go to sleep. And now the soul comes out and now the soul can eat the last piece of food. Whether it's in times of the temple, it was the Paschal lamb. Nowadays it's the matzah. The point is we satisfy the body. We tell the body, now you're good, you're satisfied, perfect. It's not about you, it's about the soul. However you look at it, according to this deeper explanation, the reason for the afikoman and the reason for the Paschal lamb is to have an experience that is completely focused on soul, not on body. So often, It becomes confusing. Is this a body experience? Is it a soul experience? Is it a mitzvah for Hashem? Or is it something that I like to do because it makes me feel good on a very physical level, materialistic level, maybe even on a selfish level? And then I might ask myself the question in a moment of introspection, did I do it for God or did I do it for myself? And maybe I might say, well, both. But both is kind of confusing and complicated. Comes the night of the Seder, and it's very clear. You ate the Paschal lamb, you ate the Karban Pesach, the Passover offering, not for you, you ate it for God. On the night of the Seder in 2020, you'll have, please God, you'll have a delicious meal, a four-course meal, a five-course meal, whatever it is. You'll have a major meal, and at the end, you're going to break out the matzah. And your body will look at you and say, are you kidding me? I need more matzah. I'm full. Genug shein, it's enough. And you'll tell your body, it's not about you. This is about the mitzvah. This is a moment. The afikoman is a moment to indulge in a mitzvah without the body. Without the body. It's not about the body. It's not about. You can't even misconstrue that it might also be a selfish or self-serving or indulgent action. It's completely about the mitzvah. God wants me to do it. I'm doing it. I'm not hungry. I'm doing it anyway because Hashem wants. Because God wants. Let's take a look at this beautiful insight as explained by the Lubavitcher Rebbe in text number 7. He said this talk in the early 1950s, shortly after he became Rebbe, and this is the source for this beautiful insight. All right, let's jump in. Mike, are you around? Mike, I'm unmuting you. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Awesome. Are you able to read text number 7?
Yes, I am.
Awesome. First of all, it's great to hear your voice.
Thank you.
All right. Is Sarah with you?
He's right here next to me.
All right. I'm very happy. I'm very happy to hear that. All right. Take it away, please.
The Passover sacrifice must be eaten on a full stomach, unlike the Sabbath meal, which should be eaten when hungry to satisfy the appetite. One of the reasons for this is to demonstrate that the Passover sacrifice is being eaten for the sake of the mitzvah, not for the sake of one's bodily pleasure. So much so, the body's interest is completely ignored. Even if the body is full and doesn't want to eat more, one nevertheless eats the Passover sacrifice with the same gusto as he would if he were hungry. Furthermore, even though one is not hungry when eating the sacrifice, nevertheless, it is eaten with tremendous joy.
Yeah. Emphasis added, I guess, because there were italics in there somewhere. Yeah. Yeah, there were italics somewhere in there. Thank you, Mike. Again, this is the point that I mentioned before. It's coming from this insight of the Rebbe from 1951. And what's the message? It's very clear. It's that the mitzvah of Karban Pesach, the Paschal Lamb, in times of the temple, the mitzvah of Afikoman, the extra matzah that we eat, those foods are eaten not for the body. They're eaten for the soul. So often, we live a confused life. Is it body? Is it soul? Is it both? You know, you give tzedakah. Did I do it because I wanted to? Did I do it because it's a mitzvah? You help, you extend chesed to someone else, a kindness. Did I do it to feel good or so that they should feel good? Maybe both. But so often the lines are blurred and it's hard to delineate. It's hard to demarcate how much of this was for me and how much of this was truly for the altruistic, the higher purpose. It's hard to delineate where I end and where God begins. Comes the night of Passover and we tell the person, Herzachain, listen up. We're going to feed your body and you'll have a wonderful meal. And once that's finished, we're going to have more food. And the body will protest and say, I don't want more food. And you'll tell your body, it's not about you, it's about God. I'm only eating this for the mitzvah. And that's how the mitzvah shines and our connection with God shines on the night of Passover. It's such a beautiful idea. Let's look at text number eight. Here, the Rebbe continues this theme. Let's do it inside. Sandrine, are you up to reading? Sandrine, are you up to reading? Oh, Sandrine is not up to reading. Okay, so let's go to, let's see. Maritza, are you there?
Yes, Rabbi.
All right, fantastic. Hope you're doing well. Please, if you can, please, if you're up to it, please read text number 8, where it says, let's explain.
Let's explain the notion of ignoring the body when eating the Passover sacrifice in terms of our personal religious experience. It is true that divine service is mainly about perfecting the body, yet everybody knows full well that their personal body and animal soul may not be spiritually up to par. Regardless, one ought to serve God with fervor and joy, thus ignoring the spiritual imperfection of the body. As the Alter Rebbe writes in Tanya, true, the body may be abominable and loathsome, yet let his divine soul be more precious to him than his loathsome body, and rejoice in the observance of the Torah and mitzvot, without letting the sadness on the account of the lowly state of the body interfere with or disturb the joy of the soul. As explained elsewhere, it is possible for a person to have weeping lodged on one side of the heart and joy lodged in the other. In other words, instead of being sad on the account of the body, it is better to rejoice on the account of the soul, and the fact that the soul you have placed in me is pure.
Thank you. So here we have the Rebbe explaining this in some spiritual psychological terms, basically speaking about the duality and really the dichotomy that exists within the human being between body and soul. The body gets into all sorts of trouble. And there's strong language used here, but understand it's trying to bring out a point. The body gets us into all the trouble. Any trouble that we've ever gotten into, it's because of the body and the animal soul. And the Yetzirah, the evil inclination. It's all from that other side, the lower side of the human being. The soul, the godly soul, doesn't get us into trouble. So the point is like this. How do you make sure that you can remain positive even when encountering the shortcomings of the body? It's by giving your soul a chance to shine. It's by tuning out the body sometimes and saying, body, I know, I hear, I've heard you 1,000 times. I know what you want, and you've gotten me a few good times. It's like I used the example a few weeks ago about Charlie Brown and the football. Yeah, I've run, I've kicked, and I've missed because you pulled the ball away, and I've slammed myself on the ground time and again. Yeah, and it's going to happen again, probably, or at least you're going to try to have that happen to me again. But here's what I have. Here's the joy that I have. The joy that I have is in my godly soul and the opportunity to do a mitzvah. So here's what's going to happen. I'm going to eat. I'm going to make you satisfied, you body, and then you'll go to sleep. And then I can really have my spiritual joy, the joy of my soul. The only question that remains, so this explains why the Paschal lamb and the Afikoman is eaten at the end of the meal, even after we're satisfied. The question that remains, however, is why on Shabbat, why don't we do the same thing? Why don't we eat a big meal Friday afternoon and then go into Shabbat and eat only for the sake of the mitzvah, only for the sake of Shabbat, right? If that's the greatest form of eating, the highest form of eating, or the most spiritual form of eating, is soul eating sans body, because the body is already full. So why not every Shabbos, Friday afternoon, eat a massive meal, Friday night, make Kiddush and eat another massive meal, and force yourself to eat? Your body's going to protest, but your soul's going to love it. Why not? The answer is, as is stated in the subsequent text, we may do one or two of the other texts. The answer is because the ultimate purpose is not to stick with the dichotomy, with this duality, with this polar opposing dynamic of the two forces of body and soul. The ultimate goal is the fusion of body and soul. The ultimate goal is where we're able to fuse together both elements of body and soul so that the body is enjoying what the soul also enjoys. And I know I said before that it can get confusing, but now we're going to make it a little bit confusing, or just speak to the ultimate. The ideal is that even the body should begin to appreciate the value of a mitzvah, that even the body should appreciate the value of helping another person, that even the body should experience and appreciate the value of studying Torah, of doing a mitzvah, of praying. Even the body should get on board with the mitzvah. That's why Friday night, the ideal is that we're hungry. And at the same time that we're satisfying the soul, we're also satisfying the body. And with that, it's training, basic training for the body, saying, look, a mitzvah's not so bad. It's not going to hurt you. Not so bad. It's good to be a Jew. It's good to have a Shabbos meal. It's good to do good things, right? It's good to serve God, right? God tells you a mitzvah, enjoy Shabbos, and that includes having a good meal, right? It's good to be Jewish. It's good to do a mitzvah. It's good to have Shabbos, to have a Shabbos meal. So we want to educate, typically, we want to educate the body in the ways of the soul so that the body also enjoys the pleasures of the soul and is not just feeling like, ugh, that soul, so lame, so, you know, so nerdy. That soul does things that are so, like, not exciting. We want the body typically to enjoy the mitzvahs as the soul does. That's why on Shabbos, for example, on Friday night, we go into it hungry. So that as we do the mitzvah of Oneg Shabbat, of enjoying Shabbat with soul, we're also enjoying it, Oneg Shabbat, with body. We have pleasure, soul and body together. Which then begs the question, so why not on Passover? Why don't we have the same confluence of body and soul and again eat the Passover lamb and the afikoman when we're still hungry so that the soul is enjoying the mitzvah and the body? Here is the key to the answer, to understanding the difference between Passover and Shabbat. Passover represents the birth of the Jewish people. Passover is when we became a nation. In the language of the prophet, it's when God extracted one nation from the bowels, from the midst, from the kishkas of another nation. Right? We were, the Jewish people were for all intents and purposes, not their own, did not have their own identity. They were not a nation. They were slaves in Egypt. God went in, extracted the Jewish people, pulled them out, and gave them a national identity. So the Exodus, which is Passover, the Exodus is all about new beginnings. And when you begin something, you have to start it off in the right way, in the best way, 100%, no compromises. You know, once you already get started and get rolling and you're already into it, then, you know, the compromises become more, unfortunately, the reality is the compromises or other things come in. But when you first start out, you have to be hardcore. You have to start with absolutes. That's why, for example, on Passover, there's no chametz. There's only matzah. There's no leavened bread, only flatbread. Why? What's the meaning of this? Leavened bread is a reference to ego. Your challah, your pastries, your baguettes, right? Your bagels, your cookies, anything that's risen, anything that's puffed up is symbolic of ego. On Passover, you get rid of the ego. It's only flat matzah, humility. One might ask the question, what's wrong with a little bit of ego? You have to have ego. Yes, you do, but not at the beginning. When you begin your journey, Passover is the beginning of the journey. When you begin your journey, you have to be an extremist. And when you're an extremist, we cut out. It's like when you start a diet, you cut out, right? It's an extreme diet, you cut out all the stuff. So the extreme Passover diet is you cut out all chametz. No ego, zero, zilch, nada, nothing, no ego. And then after Passover, you begin to work back in. You work in the chametz, you work in the ego. Hopefully, you've created a foundation of humility, of healthy humility. Now when you have a little bit of ego reintroduced into the diet, it's going to take on healthy parameters. The same thing is true when it comes to the eating modalities of Passover and Shabbat. Passover is the birth of our people. And on Passover, we want to make sure that we're feeding the soul. We want to make sure that we recognize what the body wants and what the soul wants. We feed the body the first half of the meal or whatever the rest of the meal. And then we have the Afikoman, and then we have the Paschal Lamb. We have the mitzvah eating at the end, so that it's very in the beginning. Passover is the beginning, so that it's clear in the beginning what is for the body and what's for the soul. Once we become a little bit more spiritually mature, we can then segue into the eating modality of Shabbat, where we fuse the two together and we try to impress upon the body the reichheit, the beauty, the richness of the soul's indulgence and pleasure. So we try to harmonize both the body and the soul together as one once we've gone through the experience of the eating of Passover. So again, just to be very clear here, on Passover, it's all about beginnings. And when you start off, you have to start off on the right foot. So starting off on the right foot means that I'm eating my mitzvah food at the end, so that I get in all of the body satiation, the body is going to be satisfied, and then it's the soul. Clear, this is for body, this is for soul, this is for me, this is for you. Once that's set and once that's clear, now we can have the opportunity throughout the rest of the year to eat a mitzvah meal while the body is hungry, to teach the body, you can also enjoy the soul's enjoyment. But if we never started off with that demarcation, we would never have the ability to elevate the experience of eating a Shabbat meal. It would only be a physically indulgent meal. It wouldn't have any of the spiritual properties. Make sense? Yes?
Except,
yes, Mark.
What if the first Seder is Friday night?
Yeah, but still, it has the energy of Friday night. It has the energy of Passover, which means that you would still follow the same modality, which is you would have your meal, and you know it's a Shabbat meal, so there is a mitzvah, but you would mainly focus on the energy of the first night of Passover is that rebirth. So you would mainly naturally be focused on the body part of it until the body is full, and then you can introduce the mitzvah. And then after that, you can say, aha, now that I know what a mitzvah feels like, hey, maybe the body would also like it. Again, it's the same thing like eating matzah on Passover and no chametz. It's not the chametz is treif the rest of the year. You're allowed to eat challah the rest of the year, of course. But Friday night, it's Pesach, no challah. It's only matzah, right? On Friday night, Pesach, we're extremists. Pesach is about being a bit of an extremist to get the ball started, to get the ball rolling in the right direction. It's almost like this. I want to use the example of, I have a random piece of paper. All my kids have been doing online learning. So I have in my hand my son's math homework or math work. I don't know if he needs it, but I'm going to assume that it's okay to do a simple fold because I'm going to fold it back. So watch, I'm going to take a piece of paper and make a crease into it. Okay, you see that crease? You see the crease?
Yes.
Okay, how do I fix the crease? If I go back to the middle, it's still going to be creased. I have to take it and go to the other extreme, bend it the other way, and then it will be centered once again. When something is in the other side, I got to go all the way the other opposite so that it can maintain a balance. The ultimate goal is balance, is where we do harmonize body and soul, like on Shabbat. Oneg Shabbat, you're hungry, your soul's hungry, your body's hungry, it's one meal together. That's the ultimate goal. But how do you get there? Your nation of slaves, right? Steeped in Egyptian slavery and idolatry, and who knows what was going on in Egypt. How do you get out of that? First night of Passover, we're free, baby. You feed the body, get that out of the way, and then you feed the soul. You're already full. Why are you eating? Because this is the soul's meal, right? And then you get a taste for the soul. And then you can reintegrate the soul with the body the rest of the year. The bottom line is, there's an eating for the body, there's an eating for the soul, there's an eating for both. On Passover, we tell ourselves the body is the body, but let's focus on the soul. And now I want to bring it back to, this is the insight, now I want to connect it with Passover 2020. Many of us had big plans. We were going to travel, they were going to travel, we were going to meet up, destination Passover, hotels, cruises, who knows what. Many of us around the world had plans. And you know what they say? Mensch tracht und Gott lacht. Men plan, human beings plan, and God laughs. And for many people, for many Jews, it's very possible that a person might have a sad disposition on Pesach. And a person, it's possible that a Jew, right now, 2 weeks, exactly 2 weeks before the Seder, might not be so much looking forward to Pesach. Because I wanted this, and I had in mind that, and I wanted to get together with family, and we were going to have this thing, and I can't get this. And a person might say, you know what? It's ruined. It's messed up. So here's what I want to tell you. On Pesach of all holidays, the message is, it's not so much about the body. It's about the soul. Like no other year, this year might be the year in which we sit down to our simple seders. It's not going to look maybe as grand as it's looked in the past for various reasons. But you and I can have a spiritual Seder. Maybe it's not so tweaked up in body and whatever body means and all that it includes. But you and I can make sure that this year Pesach is full on soul. We can infuse a spirit in this Pesach and this Seder like no other Pesach, precisely because maybe the body experience may be somewhat compromised. We don't celebrate and we don't look forward to this. No one planned this. No one wants it. No one likes it. Not quarantine. Not social distancing. Not any of this stuff. Not travel bans. Not 14-day quarantines. It's not what any of us asked for. But this year, we have a choice. We can bemoan the physical accoutrements that perhaps will be lacking, or we can tell ourselves, you know what? That's out of my control. But I can make sure that this Pesach is truly special in a spiritual way. Let's make it a spiritual Passover. Let's do the spiritual prep. And indeed, it should be a festival of freedom, liberating us from all sorts of limitations, physically, spiritually, internally, externally. It should be a season and a festival of salvation, of freedom, of geula, of redemption for all of us, for our families, in good health and with joy. Let us say amen. It's great to see you all tonight. Thanks for studying with me together. I just want to mention that next week, Wednesday night, 7:30 p.m., is the second Passover class. Same bat time, same bat channel. Join me. Join me next week. Tell your friends. It's very easy to join. You don't have to get into a car, sit in traffic. It's a machaya. You sit down, you grab your phone, you grab your iPad, your laptop, your desktop, you're good to go. You pick up the phone, you dial in, however you want to connect. It's easy to connect. It's easy to study Torah. Let's study Torah next week, second edition of Passover Pesach Bootcamp, Torah studies. One final point, there are many other opportunities to study throughout the week in Town Jewish Academy. I'm doing classes multiple times each day. Tomorrow at noon, we have the Daily Power Parsha. Tomorrow night, 8 p.m., Cooking with Rabbi Ari. Join me. Oh, yes, yes. Last week we did potato kugel. I'm telling you, the kugel, I mean, this is a problem with the social distancing and the quarantine. I would have loved to share the kugels. The kugels were out of this world. Tomorrow night, I have more surprises in store for you. You don't want to miss this. All new cooking show with me, hosted live from my kitchen with my kids helping, hopefully, because they're good helpers. So join me for that. It's must-see TV. And by that, I mean, remember Thursday nights on NBC, Seinfeld, Friends? This is even better than that. This is Cooking with Rabbi Ari. It doesn't get any better. So join me tomorrow night. And in general, reach out, do a mitzvah, focus on soul. Let's connect. let's make this as positive as it can be, just in general, under the circumstances. No, Joel, to clarify, this is not the same link. If you want to know, tomorrow night is not the same link as tonight. Next week is the same link as tonight. Every class is a little bit different. So look on the website, intownjewishacademy.org/live, for the live classes. intownjewishacademy.org/live, and you'll get links. For anyone that wishes to help support In Town Jewish Academy, these are not easy times for all of us. If you are feeling generous, if you're feeling the desire to help support what we're doing with keeping community and keeping connection and keeping Torah alive, please help us out, intownjewishacademy.org/donate. The donate button on our website will very, very greatly help in continuing what we're doing. So thank you all for joining me tonight. Laila Tov, Lehitraot, and enjoy the soul of the rest of your day and of Pesach. We'll see you all soon.
Thank you, Rabbi.
Pleasure, pleasure. Pleasure, pleasure. See you soon.
Thank you. What time tomorrow night?
8 p.m.
8 p.m.
8 p.m. We'll see you.
Thank you.
See you.
Bye.
Bye.